Welcome or welcome back to the second episode of the International Law for Peace podcast. My name is Sheila Besic, and today I am here joined with a very, very special guest, and I would just introduce him. So I am here with Mr. Stefan Ziegler. Mr. Ziegler has over 25 years of experience in the fields of research and advocacy related to humanitarian action. He is an independent consultant for a humanitarian training and facilitation, currently engaged in relief efforts in Syria, Turkey, and Libya. Mr. Ziegler is associate professor at the Geneva School of Diplomacy. Previously, Mr. Ziegler established and headed the Barrier Monitoring Unit for the UN in Ramallah, West Bank. This was a research-based advocacy and protection project which analyzed the impact of Israel's wall and Palestinian communities. It was where he developed the idea for his NGO called Learning Alliance. Currently, and above all, Mr. Ziegler is expanding the catalog of international law film projects for the public and for educational purposes. His award-winning documentary, Broken, A Journey Through International Law, is available in over 100 university libraries the world over and is taught to tens of thousands of students every year. Broken served as an entry point of our project here. Mr. Ziegler holds also a master's with distinction in international studies from the University of Limerick, a bachelor in sociology of development from University College Cork, both in Ireland, and a postgraduate diploma in humanitarian assistance from Fordham University in New York. Prior to the UN, he worked for the International Committee of the Red Cross, where he developed on-the-ground humanitarian aid experience and promoted sustainable handover of development projects in Georgia, Abkhazia, Palestine, and the Balkans. He is a member of the Irish and Swiss emergency response teams, as well as the Swiss Foreign Affairs Expert Pool. He published widely and has given presentations at the EU Parliament, the UN headquarters in New York, and Geneva. Welcome, Mr. Ziegler.
Thank you very much. That was a mouthful. Yes. Thank you for introducing me in such detail.
Thank you. So, if you don't mind, I would like to start with the very first questions that we received from our students here at our school. So the very first question we got is, who is the attacker and who is the defender in the current difficult situation?
I think it's important to say that if we want all of us, that is, right, like human beings, want to use a language that is common to all of us in terms of international law, as we're speaking today, then maybe the words attacker and defender are certainly not part of that vocabulary. These are terms that we would use, in all sorts of ways, but certainly not in international contexts and conflicts. So just so that you understand, because if you start with using that kind of language, you're already precluding to know who's at right and who's at fault.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think what I'm going to say to you is the views that I share with a lot of academics in the world, and a lot of them are senior also analysts on the current context, including some of the lawyers that are right now working with the South African team in bringing the case of genocide before the court in The Hague. I share with those people that certainly the conflict that we see now has a long, long history, way, way before this 7th of October. And this is also why it's difficult to say who is an attacker or not. It depends, obviously, how you also look at history. But what I would say is, and that's a particular case, as we know, Gaza and the other territory called the Palestinian territory, are occupied And it's the occupation that is probably the trigger that your question tries to elucidate. So there is a problematic here. Because of the occupation, there is actually a very clear definition of who started, if you wish, this problematic situation now, and that was when the what the Palestinians called the Nakba, or the catastrophe in 1948 happened, when people were driven from their land and were never allowed to go back. And if you look at the description of an occupation means, both in military and in civilian terms or administrative terms, you will see that we have a number of factors that are, let's say, the least, they're odd. Why? When the United Nations drew up their charter, and also at the same time when the International Committee of the Red Cross established or re-established the Geneva Conventions after the Second World War, the term occupation meant it's a temporary thing, which means it lasts for as long as there is military reason. But obviously, this has never stopped. And so people have been living under the occupation for 75 years. Mm-hmm. It is legal for a people occupied to engage in armed resistance. So what we see on the 7th of October is an expression of a people under occupation for so many years, deprived of many of the human rights that you and me in Central Europe have gotten used to. Not being able to give you a very solid and thorough answer, but I think that's the best I can tell you. There is an attack on a people. It doesn't matter where you which war it is or where you go. There are limits to war, and this is very clearly established in international law. And what we're seeing now is an expression of the worst of the crimes that humanity has seen, certainly in the last few centuries.
So I have then another question based on the first question. If it was formulated different, as of who is the oppressor and who is the occupier, do you think you could give me maybe a more clear answer?
Okay, yeah. Well, the world is not a simple place, huh?
Yeah, that's true.
So the occupier, we know, is Israel, and the occupied are the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. There is enough evidence to know that Palestinians should not have been occupied for so long. That was not the idea. And then the whole problem got really out of hand, I think, when Israel started settling people into a territory that was not theirs. So now you have about 650,000 people in the West Bank that are Israeli Jewish or whatever, but they're Israeli, and they live on Palestinian land. And if you think if somebody came across the border from Luxembourg, any of your borders, and would just come in and say, well, actually, we're going to settle people here. We're going to, defend our own country on your territory. I think, anger is probably just one word for what happens then. And that's where I think you should look when you're looking at the origins of this current conflict.
Thank you for answering the question, because I think it helped a little bit that it's differently formulated, because I do agree that the word attacker and defender are very strong words. And as you said, everyone can look at the situation differently because of those words. And I would like to continue with the second question, which is, how is it possible for Israel to simply take over a country and claim that it is now their country?
Well, again, you're not going to get a very easy answer here, because international law is very clear here, okay? Mm-hmm. First of all, an occupation, when an occupation becomes permanent, it's called annexation,
mm-hmm.
right? And that means this will not be, nobody in the world will actually accept that nowadays anymore, okay? Annexation is something that used to happen, especially during the colonization of the period and so on, but In this case, when you're already occupied, by a country, you effectively do not have self-determination. And this is one of the biggest words that are going through the courts right now. People without land have no power to say what their future will look like.
Mm-hmm.
They can't decide anything. It's all predestined by, here in this case, by the occupier. That's as much as I can tell you right now, okay?
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I would follow with the third question. And we actually got this question a couple of times by our students. And so they asked, why doesn't the war stop? It's been in the media for so long, and it seems as if nobody's doing anything about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can give you an answer to that. The only thing that I can tell you is, when we're talking about international law, that's what I think is the only language there is for peace,
mm-hmm.
because there's nothing else. But law is only as strong as the political will behind it. So if there is no political will, and that we see, I mean, there is no political will on the Israeli side, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not on the Israeli governmental side, which is the ones that have the power. It will not stop. It will not stop until they reach their aim. And that could change over time, of course, right?
Yeah, so based on that, I have another question, my personal question. But do you think, as of the last few past days, I've seen that Ghana, for an example, and other countries are willing to take the Israeli government to court. And I do think those are very big steps for a peaceful solution. But do you think those steps will actually do anything?
Yes and no, of course, right? I mean, we can't be blue-eyed and say just because, and I think we should talk about South Africa more than anybody else, because they did the first step, and they took a step that nobody else did, okay? So, but correct, Ghana and others are now getting on this train as well. But the problem is that, again, the court system, the world court system, so the International Court of Justice in The Hague, and I'm not talking about criminal court at the moment, because that's a very different setup, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the International Court of Justice, that also features very strongly in the film that we made, because
mm-hmm.
we wanted to know why don't people stop warring, okay? And that's very much at the base of my film work and stuff. But here I would say nobody believes that, you know, that a court decision, albeit, you know, on quite some magnitude, will actually change the situation. The change will have to come slowly through measures that will bring the occupier, or the Israeli army here, to reason. And so if anybody thinks that's going to happen overnight, I'm afraid that's very unlikely, okay? However, bringing a case before the court like this is changing the attitudes mm-hmm. of some of those countries here in Europe and in America that gave full support with weapons and everything,
mm-hmm.
In the last few months. I think public opinion is going to change. And to call Israel to court over a case of genocide, even if it's found out that it's not quite genocide or whatever, you know, whatever ways people will start to look at this, but this is really strong language, especially in the case of Israel and the history of the Jews in the Second World War. So I think this is going to beat them from the back, okay? Mm-hmm. Because you cannot uphold everything that you do. Some people will start imposing sanctions, and I think a couple of countries have already started imposing sanctions on Israel. That's the only way, from the outside, this can work. But as long as there is so much peace hungriness or bellicose language and all of that, you know, it's not going to be Israel that's going to back down. It's going to be the pressure from outside. And court cases like these do help, okay?
Because I've imagined it like this, because there are countries taking Israel, the Israel government, to court, I do imagine that there is a spark of hope for the outsiders, that can be for the people watching at home what's been going on, and obviously for the Palestinians themselves. I can imagine this is a big moment, actually, to see a big step taking into the future as of finding a peaceful solution. Which brings me to the last two questions. I would like to know more your opinion about it, not just the facts, but also your point on it. So we got asked by a student, how can we find peace so that this doesn't happen again? I do know that is a very, very hard question to answer. But what do you think, how can we find it so this doesn't happen again in the next years, following years? What do you think? How can we find peace so that this doesn't happen again?
Well, in actual fact, I think it's not a difficult question, because the question has to be asked, okay? The answer is, from my personal work and involvement in peace work and humanitarian work and so on, I think the only way we can do this is if we adhere to international law.
I agree.
But there has to be a willingness. And people cannot just choose which law would suit them in which situation. I think the strengthening of international law has, and this is the answer I give you personally, because that's what I do every day, I believe international law needs to be understood.
In which way?
It has to be taught at schools.
I agree.
There has to be education. There has to be awareness raising. But most people, until a few months ago, didn't even really know what international law stood for. They heard the term, and that was fine. But I think, and that is where we are extremely strongly involved in the work that I do through my companies. You know, on the one hand, making films that people understand what international law is, raise the awareness, and I think that's the only way we can stop wars, if ever, okay?
Yeah, so actually the first time I heard about international law was actually last year when you visited our school and you showed us your movie, which it really took a toll on me, because I kind of saw the Israeli side on another point of view, because I do have very strong beliefs in what I believe in and what I do think is right and wrong. And then when I watched the film with my other classmates, I don't know, it just kind of opened another view for me, and I found it so interesting. I really, really enjoyed watching your movie. And that is actually the first time that I heard about international law. And it kind of awakened an interest in me to know more about it, because how can it be that something is illegal and it's still standing, as, for example, the wall? So thank you so much for that. Also, based on your answer from before, our very last question from a student is, why is it so important to talk about such a topic and make it a subject of discussion in schools?
I have a long and a short answer to this, okay? The long one will take 4 hours, okay? But the short answer is, if we don't understand what's going on, how can we influence it in any way? okay? Because our personal experience and our actions as human beings and in societies are based on the knowledge of what's going on. And when people don't know, well, you see exactly what the result is. So schools are probably the first place to start with. Because you're the next generation that needs to adjust things if we don't want to have war. I think we've left it far too long, our generation.
Yes, I totally agree. I think, as for a matter, this topic should be taught in school from a very young age, not too young, but at that level where you do kind of understand how the world works and why it works in certain ways, so that things like these don't happen again and people can actually make their mind about it. You know, they don't need to listen to other people's opinions. When they know about the topic, they can make their own opinions about it. And that's why I think it's so, so important. And I'm really, really glad that someone asked this question.
Yes, may I just say something to what you said?
Of course.
You know, just using your example of seeing the film and saying what you're saying, that this was the first time, I think that's a very important expression. And it's also important to link it to why we're having this phone call right now, this podcast, and what the work has been of one of your classes and school colleagues. You know, that's the kind of thing, and that doesn't harm anybody.
That's a
good expression of freedom of speech, of respecting human rights, because it is, if you want to speak out, and you can make up your own mind. This is not about influencing people with strange ideas. This is really about being open to think and to think critically.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I wanted to ask you if you would maybe like to add anything about your movie, because it does reference international law heavily. It's based on it. And did you maybe learn something more when you visited Palestine? Because I know you have been in Palestine for the movie, for the production of the movie. And would you like to add something about your movie, Broken?
Yeah, I spoke to two of your teachers today, and I think it's important to realize that the movie itself may be a little bit on the more difficult side of understanding international law, and that's not just because you're a certain age or you know, that includes your teachers and it includes a lot of people that are not every day exposed to this kind of topic. But I think we're now coming out with a new film. If you give me 2 minutes, I'll advertise my film.
No worries. No worries. You can do it. Go ahead.
Yeah, because the new film is called The Mandate, and The Mandate is about handing international law from the books, from the judges, to some kind of an intermediary, like our film company, for example, who then hands this down to the ordinary person. Mm-hmm. So this film speaks to everyone. It's very simple language. There is no argument in it other than saying we have international law, but we need to spread it. And just to say that we had judges and very well-known, jurists talking to us and supporting the idea of handing this mandate to, you know, young people like yourselves or to anyone who is interested in. So that's the kind of the aspiration that we have with the new film. It's really to show that we own this. This is not something that statesmen own. International law is for everyone.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And I'm really excited when your new movie comes out. I will be definitely watching it. And I wanted to thank you again. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk with us and to learn more about the international law.
Okay, so thank you very much, and I hope I'll be coming back to your school maybe during this year or so, to be able to thank you all for your tremendous work, okay?
Hopefully. Thank you so much again.
Bye.
Goodbye.
In a world of mushroom disturbance, bound by universal codes, laws of the land, justice should be passed. A promise we won, giving directions in stories untold. No will enter your mind to fight. All the law of nations have become some rights. Uniting is all in the pursuit of what's right. Borders may part us, but still we unite under the banner of justice.